Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's good to be with you, and it's good to just have blood pumping through my body. And that's not just a reference to being alive. Of course, I'm happy to be alive. But this morning, as I was attending Denver Bible Church, my youngest daughter, Alexis, decided to fall asleep on me just as the sermon began. And if you've ever heard Bob Enyart preach, that man can preach. He can go on for quite some time. It was about a 40-minute sermon. And Lexi was sleeping on my chest the entire time. And I leaned back in the pew. And at the end of the sermon, I went to wake Lexi up. The entire right side of my body was numb. I couldn't move out of my chair for several moments. You know, you feel the blood tingle as it rushes back into the extremities. It was quite the scene. Not to disparage Bob's preaching, but he lost Lexi early on in the sermon. It's an awesome sermon, by the way. Preaching out of the book of Hebrews. And Bob mentioned the eternal kingship and lordship of Jesus Christ. And we'll get to something related to that a little later in the show. But let's go now to the important headlines. This is from CBS in Tampa. Edward Archibald, a 32-year-old resident of West Palm Beach, Florida, has died as a result of asphyxia due to choking and aspiration of gastric contents. Not a good way to go. The medical examiner said that his airway was obstructed by cockroach body parts, which caused him not to be able to breathe. Yes, Archibald died after eating bugs as well as worms. I said, in an October 6th contest in which the grand prize was a python. According to the medical examiner, lab tests for drugs came back negative. The death has been ruled an accident. So Edward Archibald, sober, in his right mind, ate cockroaches and worms until he died. And I don't know what it was that caught my attention about this story. Typically, when I do a story, I like to have a moral to the story or a point to the story, but this seems pretty pointless. I guess the python was the point. That must have went to the runner-up. I guess the moral of the story is don't eat live cockroaches. Or you'll, anything. Well, don't eat live anything, yeah. But especially cockroaches. Do they have an exoskeleton? Don't eat anything alive with an exoskeleton. I'm not sure if they have an exoskeleton. But they don't look like they would go down too easy. Anyway, if you don't want your death to be just a joke for all of time, don't eat live cockroaches and worms. No other point to that story, ladies and gentlemen. No word on where the python did end up. Meanwhile, as I was preparing for the broadcast, I noticed a story that the chapel at West Point has hosted its first homosexual wedding. That's right, just this past week, maybe even today. Didn't read the whole story because it made me nauseous. Anyway, that pretty much completes the defilement of all that separated America from the heathen nations in the land. West Point and their first homosexual wedding. That's just great. Meanwhile, in San Bernardino, from the Domestic Tranquility File, this is from CBS, again, two stories from CBS, oddly enough. The city attorney of San Bernardino explained that because the city is bankrupt and slashing public safety budgets, people will need to start protecting themselves. That's right, City Attorney Jim Penman, he said approximately 150 residents came to a city council meeting to voice their concern about recent crimes in the area, including the murder of an elderly woman just last week. He said, well, let's see. First, I've got City Councilwoman Wendy. Wendy said, quote, "You could tell the swell of frustration was coming over a lot of folks. They did not feel like they could get an officer out as quickly as some of the quality of life issues that they were dealing with as they would have preferred. People are frustrated." Well, City Attorney Jim Penman said, he says, well, if I remember right, I told the people there to lock their doors and load their guns. And he's come under some fire for that. But that's been good advice since the dawn of, well, at least since guns, right? It used to be sharpen your sword and lock your door. Now it's load your gun and lock your door. The city attorney said the city's dealing with bankruptcy, which has forced officials to cut its police force by about 80 officers. And now there's been growing criticism about the San Bernardino's police department's response time. The city attorney says, quote, "Let's be honest. We don't have enough police officers. We have too many criminals living in this city. We've had 45 murders this year, and that's far too high for a city this size." Well, I couldn't agree more, Mr. City Attorney, with both of your statements. The city of San Bernardino, according to CBS in Los Angeles, has seen a 50% increase in murders this year compared to 2011. And it's probably not just the fact that the city has gone bankrupt and can't afford to hire police officers, because it's fairly rare for a police officer to prevent a murder. They usually get the distasteful job of arriving on scene after the murder has taken place. What's really the problem is, well, City Attorney Jim Penman and the justice system that he serves. Making crime something that we as citizens are expected to tolerate, even murder. And so domestic tranquility continues to circle the drain out in San Bernardino. And now let's go for an even more shocking story to thesmokinggun.com. According to a Winchester, Indiana Police Department report, Taz Miller, young man, 18 years old, became enraged late last Saturday when he realized that his turkey was eaten out of the refrigerator by his mother's 35-year-old live-in boyfriend. Miller, who describes himself as, quote, "a fighter and a rapper," unquote, on his Twitter page, retaliated for the pilferage of his turkey by stabbing the live-in boyfriend in the arm and leg with a knife. And he then tried to strangle him. Yeah, that's the live-in boyfriend pilfering the turkey of the firstborn son. And the son, well, anyway. So don't steal turkey would be the moral to that story. And, you know, moms, if you've got kids, a live-in boyfriend is a bad idea, generally. It puts a lot of extra tension in the relationship that's really not necessary. So, well, two morals to that story. Two for the price of one. You're getting your money's worth on the Weekly Worldview this week, ladies and gentlemen. More from the domestic tranquility file. As I said, domestic tranquility, not what it used to be. This is from Casper, Wyoming. Casper? More grisly details of the horrific murder-suicide in Wyoming have come to light. A younger man killed his father's live-in girlfriend and then barged into his father's computer science class at Casper Community College and shot his father in the head with a high-powered crossbow. One of the most bizarre crimes I've heard of in quite some time. Police are still trying to figure out what motivated young Christopher Crum to attack his father, James Crum, and James Crum's live-in girlfriend, Heidi Arnold. Just don't know why this. The college has planned a candlelight vigil and a memorial service. Yeah, candlelight vigils. What's the point there? I don't get that. I'm not sure I understand what the candlelight vigils are all about. I think it's just further evidence of the feminization of society. And I've got another story. Yeah, here it is, too. It's next, oddly enough. Again, from the domestic tranquility file, as if we haven't had enough already. of the stabbing and the shooting and the crossbowing. It just goes on and on. This is from Newsday this morning. Dateline Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City Chiefs linebacker Jovan Belcher shot his girlfriend to death Saturday at their home and then killed himself in front of three team officials at Arrowhead Stadium. Belcher was 25. His girlfriend, Cassandra Perkins, was 22, and they had together a three-month-old daughter. The child is said now to be in the custody of Belcher's mother, who witnessed the first shooting and of the live-in girlfriend and called 911. And people seem to be confused about how to react to this story. Again, sadness. Everybody wants to have a candlelight vigil and a memorial. Only sadness. Never outrage. Never anger. Can't we be outraged and angry at the fact that this guy murdered the mother of his child? As far as I'm concerned, we should be angry. We should be outraged. We should want to know what was going on. And his name should be blotted out from under heaven forever. He's a murderer. And one of the worst kind of murderers. He murdered the mother of his own child. And you've got football, not officials, but members of the Kansas City football organization weeping and tearing and saying how sad it all is. Well, I'm frankly disgusted by the fact that a man would murder the mother of his three-month-old child. Okay, I'm outraged and I'm angry. I understand the family can be sad, but we as a society, we don't need to have a candlelight vigil every time someone explodes and murders someone. And we don't have to memorialize everything. Okay? His name should be blotted out, that's all. He should be forgotten. He should be loathed. He should be forever hated for what he did. That's how I'll choose to deal with it. All right, I've got an update here. Well, speaking of memorials, I've got an update on a story we did either last week or last month, not long ago. This is from Mahanga, Minnesota. The Mahanga School Board has decided to allow a memorial page to be published in this year's high school yearbook. Kyle Kenyon would have been a senior at Monaga High School this year, and many students wanted to include a page to honor his memory. But it seemed that wouldn't happen after the school had a conversation with mental health experts over his death. It was recommended that we don't do a memory page, said the superintendent, and about 100 classmates signed a petition to get that memorial page, and now the school board recently voted to allow a memorial page for Kyle Kenyon. Now, I read this entire article from CBS in Minnesota, and nowhere in the article does it remind us that Kyle Kenyon killed himself. And that's why mental health experts said maybe you don't want to put a memorial page for a student who kills himself, because next year the depressed students, they know if they kill themselves, at least they get a memorial page. Not a good idea. To normalize and mainstream suicide, and I think that you give memorial pages to someone who does something heroic, and maybe they die in their act of heroism, in their act of heroism. Maybe they die, and then they get a memorial. But killing yourself does not qualify as heroism, or does it in modern-day America? Maybe it does. Maybe it's just below being a homosexual. Suicide. Get a memorial. I wonder if they'll be having a vigil. Didn't see a vigil mentioned in the article, but we can imagine that there will be a number of candlelight vigils as well. Okay, so that's about it from the Domestic Tranquility file. Pretty depressing file to open with. I'm not sure why I decided to open with that. I think it's because I opened with the cockroach story. Yeah, well. But the rest of the news, it just gets worse, ladies and gentlemen. Do I want to go right to the United Nations? I don't know if I want to go to the United Nations yet. It's just really depressing what's happening over there at the United Nations. All right, how about we'll do one from the Wave Goodbye file. This is a new file that we've established here at the Weekly Worldview. This is for America and Western civilization in general, the Wave Goodbye file, the U.S. birth rate, according to the National Journal, has dropped to its lowest level since the beginning of the Great Depression. The birth rate is down. It was 63.2 per 1,000 women of childbearing age, the lowest since at least the 1920s. Yeah. Now, the birth rate reached over 120 back in 1957 at the peak of the baby boom. And after the mid-70s, the birth rate stabilized at about 65 to 70 births per 1,000 women annually until the beginning of what is now being called the Great Recession. Since 07, the U.S. birth rate and the number of births in the United States has dropped significantly. Overall, the birth rate declined 8% from 2007 to 2010. So America, Western civilization, everything we thought we had that made us exceptional, well, just wave goodbye. Doug McBurney. Thank you, boys. Put those guitars away. Got to get back to the hard news. As it seems that we're back, we've gone back into the dark ages. It's just bizarre. I have to go to the UN now. Have no choice. This is a story from the Washington Post. Dateline the United Nations as if it was a state. The UN General Assembly voted Thursday to grant Palestinians recognition of statehood. That's right. The 193-member UN body voted 138-9 with 41 abstentions to recognize Palestine as a non-member observer state, a status that, provides Palestinians with limited privileges as a state, including the right to join the International Criminal Court and other international blood-sucking, money-grubbing, treaty societies. Treaty bodies, I should say. So Palestine has been declared a state for the first time in the history of all history. There never was one, and now there is one. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, shortly thereafter, issued a statement accusing Mahmoud Abbas of having violated the agreements between the two sides, and Bibi pledged that, quote, Israel will act accordingly, unquote. And I think Israel has begun now to take back some of the welfare money that they've been giving to Mahmoud Abbas and Hamas and whoever it is who's in charge of the Philistines down there in Gaza. And so there, taking back some of that welfare. Step in the right direction, Bibi. According to the Washington Post, the date of the Palestinian statehood bid carries symbolic importance for both sides, coming on the anniversary of the General Assembly vote on November 29, 1947, to partition British-ruled Palestine into a Jewish and Arab state, a step that led to the creation of Israel. So on the very same date that the UN decided to start working on a homeland for the Jews who had been persecuted in the Holocaust, not just persecuted, murdered, gassed, and burned, and driven from Eastern Europe almost to a man, they decide to give the Philistines a state. Now, the Washington Post doesn't tell the whole story. They say that there was a partition a partition of British-ruled Palestine into a Jewish and Arab state. So what they don't tell you in this story was that the Arabs were given a state on the other side of Jordan. That's right, it was called Transjordan, and that was the Arab state. Yeah. But the Arabs abandoned that in a rush to conquer Israel and kill all the Jews. That's how you got the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and the dispute of the occupied territories, whatever you want to call that. The British gave the Arabs a state. It was called Transjordan. Well, they didn't want that. Now, as far as I know, last week in the major media, only Michael Savage and Glenn Beck mentioned this story with anything more than a passing interest. And I found it, frankly, shocking that this story was not big news. I mean, the Palestinians have been granted their state by the United Nations. You would think that that would have been headline news all over the place. But I hardly heard about it at all. And now, on top of that, to add insult to injury, Mahmoud Abbas, the head of, what is he the head of? The Palestinian Authority, the head of the snake. He's the chairman of the Palestinian Authority, the PA. We could just call him the Philistine Authority. Well, he said on Sunday in his victory speech, he had a victory speech, as you can well imagine. He said one day, this is to quoting Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the snake, the Philistine Authority. He said, one day a young Palestinian will raise the Palestinian flag over Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the state of Palestine. He said that in front of God and everybody, if you can believe that. There are some opposing viewpoints, Mr. Abbas. Let's go back approximately, let's see, Ezekiel. How long ago did Ezekiel live? I don't want to embarrass myself. 3,000 or more years ago, or thereabouts. Ezekiel said this in the 43rd chapter. The glory of the Lord came into the temple by way of the gate which faces toward... Oh, warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor and perhaps imprison and even kill anyone who would ever consider the possibility of even quoting a single Bible verse in public or private, frankly. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Ezekiel said, the glory of the Lord came into the temple by the way of the gate which faces toward the east. The Spirit lifted me up and brought me into the inner court, and behold, the glory of the Lord filled the temple. Then I heard him speaking to me from the temple while a man stood beside me. And he said to me, son of man, this is the place of my throne and the place of the soles of my feet where I will dwell in the midst of the children of Israel forever. Forever, unquote. Quoting God, by the way. Ezekiel was quoting our Heavenly Father, the Creator, the Judge, and if you'll give him the opportunity, the Savior of the whole earth. That's who Ezekiel was quoting. By the way, the temple to which Ezekiel refers in the 43rd chapter, it's in Jerusalem, last I checked. That temple is in Jerusalem. The Lord says he will dwell in the midst of the children of Israel forever. And if there's one thing you need to understand about the difference between the Philistines and the Jews, the Hebrews, is that the Philistines insist that there can be no Jews living in the Palestinian state. It must be Judenfrei. Is that it? The German? Wasn't that the German phrase used? Judenfrei? Free of Jews. There must be no Jews. Now, the Jews let the Philistines live in their midst in Israel. If you go to Israel, you get a ride in a cab. It could be driven by a Jew. It could be driven by an Arab. You never know, because the Jews say we'll allow them to live. But the Philistines say the Jews cannot live in Israel. So Mr. Abbas says that a Palestinian flag will fly over the eternal capital of Palestine. But God disagrees, Mr. Abbas. In fact, let's go to Psalm 89, just in case. You know, we like to establish things by more than one witness. Two or three witnesses, the Bible says, establishes a matter. And so let's go to Psalm 89. God says, I will not lie to David. His seed shall endure forever, and his throne as the sun before me, and it shall be established forever like the moon, even like the faithful witness in the sky, Selah. That means listen, Mr. Abbas. Listen to what God says. By the way, David's throne that God says will be established forever, it's in Jerusalem. Yeah, it's in Jerusalem. So, Mr. Abbas has his opinion. God has his opinion. And, well, we'll see how that ends up, Mr. Abbas. So, folks, we haven't covered the Mayan calendar here because, well, it's so stupid and pagan and meaningless. You know, that's kind of the main thing. But, you know, there's been talk about 12-21-12, yes, the end of the world and all that. Well, I say forget about the end of the world. I mean, we're going to wish it was that easy if by December 21st, 2012, there's a nuclear exchange in the Middle East, and it's looking like there's nothing left to stop that from happening. It's almost an inevitability now that there will be a nuclear war in the Middle East. And so what I'm confused about this past week, this past month, I should say, is that the Philistines launch rockets on Israel day after day after day. Israel takes out one of their leaders, and then there's a crescendo of violence and bloodshed. And more rockets, hundreds of rockets a day launched into Israel. And you wake up the next morning, and the Philistines have been given a state. The people launching the rockets have been granted statehood by the United Nations. I feel like I'm living in an alternate, deranged universe. Jerusalem, the eternal capital of Palestine. I can't believe he has the nerve to say that. But then again, you know, he's a full-on pagan. He's sold out to his beliefs. Now, the Jews in the land, I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, aren't nearly as sold out to their beliefs as the Arabs are to theirs. And there aren't hardly enough Christians in Jerusalem, to fill a small tent. So, it's going to get ugly over there. We may be wishing the world ended on 12-21-12. That might have been the easy way out for the Mayan comet to come and just blast everybody into kingdom come. I think it's going to be much, much more difficult than anything like that. And I'm sorry to say it, but that's the way it's looking. All right, let's go to, I had this in the war file, then I moved it to the culture file, then back into the war file, and I marked it as the social experiment file. Because that's what our military has become under Barry Ho and the girls who tell him what to do. Our military is more of a social experiment than anything else, anyway. According to the Washington Times, four female members of the armed services have filed a lawsuit against the Department of Defense saying that their ban, the DOD ban on women serving in combat, is unconstitutional and hurts their military careers. Yes, each of the four women, as you can well imagine, are represented by the American Civil Liberties Union. Yes. Women are currently barred from all infantry positions in the military. Last we checked, don't you wake up tomorrow morning, that could be different. ACLU senior staff lawyer Ariella Migdal, she's the senior lawyer in charge of destroying the United States military and anything else she can get her hands on. She said last Tuesday, quote, "Service women who've been spending the last 10 years trying to accomplish missions in Iraq and Afghanistan are coming back and seeing that there really is a brass ceiling," unquote. That's the lawyer for the ACLU who's looking to destroy the Army. But as we mentioned at the top of the show, the Army at West Point just hosted their first homosexual wedding. Can the ACLU do any further damage? Could they do anything worse than what the Army has just done to itself?
Nation.
And we're back. Oh, just let that roll a little bit. It's called Girl Nation. The band is Disneyland After Dark, which is where I feel like I'm living. Disneyland. Yeah. Anyway, that's where we are. Okay, let's go back to the Girl Nation now. From the politics file. Okay, boys. It's about enough of that. No, you just want to keep playing it? She just wants to keep playing it. All right. Back to Girl Nation. Another story from the Washington Times. So let me just recap for those who joined us after the break. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, I catch a lot of things just surfing around on television and on the radio. I'll be driving across country, and there's nothing I like more than hitting scan on the radio after dark when you can pick up every station from Oklahoma City to Honolulu when you're driving out in the western United States here. And I like to just see what will the radio bring me. You know, it's kind of like rolling the dice, and you just see what you get. And sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's lousy. Sometimes it's NPR. You know, but sometimes it's something interesting that you weren't even looking for, but you find it. It's like that Rush song, Spirit of the Radio. I live that. I spend a lot of time on the road. So, but Spirit of the Radio is going away. No, it's Spirit of Radio. I apologize, Getty. Spirit of Radio. Oh, no, Neil wrote that. Spirit of Radio. Anyway, that's going the way of the 8-track tape, because people don't generally scan the media anymore and just experience things that they weren't even looking for. If you're listening to this podcast, it's because you chose to download it. And because I'm frankly too controversial to ever be allowed on any airwaves anywhere ever. Yeah, I could never do it. No, I would probably, if I had an actual show on the terrestrial airwaves, I'm certain that someone would storm the doors and arrest me. So that's just not going to happen. But a lot of times I'm scanning on the radio, I'm scanning on TV, and I just come across things. And it's nice, it's fun. Sometimes it's a song, sometimes it's a news story, sometimes it's an interview. But that's all going away. And what was the point of bringing that up? Well, just that. It's just going away. But I should get back to the story, right? Did I recap? That's right, I wanted to recap. You have the four fine young ladies, officers, two of them are Marines, as a matter of fact, represented by the ACLU lawyer. Yeah, her name is Ariella Migdal. Hello, can I help you with your lawsuit to destroy America? You want a cigarette?
All right, so you got the four girls, I'm sorry, the four officers, the four ladies who are suing the Department of Defense. Meanwhile, over at headquarters, United States Marine Corps, this is according to the Washington Times, only two of about 80 eligible female Marines have volunteered for a new course that the Marine Corps has recently opened up to women. They opened up a course out at Quantico. And it's an infantry course. It's called the Infantry Officers Course. It's been around for a long time. But they've just recently opened it up to women before this lawsuit was even filed, because the Marine Corps and the other branches of the Army are under branches of the military. Did I say branches of the Army? That'd get me in trouble. The Marine Corps and the other branches are under tremendous pressure to homosexualize and feminize as quickly as possible. And so the Marine Corps, as usual, getting out ahead of the curve, they've opened up the course, the infantry officers course, to women in order to research the performance of female candidates. Okay? Now, let me just tell you something about the infantry officers course in the United States Marine Corps. If you get through the infantry officers course, you are a genuine tough American. You are a killing machine. Okay, if you need to be. It's a very tough course. I was enlisted in the Marine Corps. I never heard a shot fired in anger, and I doubt I could have survived the infantry officer's course. I mean, the attrition rate is tremendous. Very few Marine Corps officers become infantry officers. through the course. So it's a very, very tough course. Well, the Marine Corps opened it up. There's about 80 eligible female Marine officers at the time. Only two volunteered. Okay? Of the two female volunteers, one washed out on the first day. Before you laugh, 26 of the 107 men washed out on the very first day. So I told you, this is a tough course. The other female who volunteered dropped out 2 weeks later for medical reasons. So the first two who volunteered. Now, do you think that the ACLU lawyer, Ariella Migdal, do you think she cares that the women can't make it? Yeah, do you think? No, she doesn't care. Her goal is not to put women in combat and improve their military careers. Her goal is to destroy the nation, to undermine everything that is right and good and righteous and just and clean and pure about America. She doesn't care that the reason women aren't in combat is because women just aren't made, built for combat. It's a terrible idea. Back to the article. The Marine Corps wants to test at least 90 more women in the course before making any decision about women serving in infantry roles. So what do you think, folks? Number one, at this rate, it's going to take about 25 years to get 90 women who can make it past the first day of the course. Okay, so it could be a long time. But do you think that the Marine Corps, in light of the overwhelming evidence that women are not built or made to be Marine Corps infantry officers, the Marine Corps will gather all the evidence as these girls wash out of the course. And then, by the way, the Marine Corps gathers all kinds of evidence that half the men who try aren't qualified. So this isn't a sexist rant, okay? But in the face of the Marine Corps data that a certain male lieutenant can't make it, well, he's not allowed. He's thrown out. He's sent off to do something else. Go back in the rear with the gear. You can't do it. But what do you think will happen when the Marine Corps starts to gather the data that proves that women simply cannot handle the rigorous nature of this physically almost impossible course? I remember sitting around talking with second lieutenants who had just come. Most of them were first lieutenants by then. Anyway, they had done this course, and some of the stories make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. It's terrifying what they put these guys through. But will the Marine Corps be allowed to say, okay, we've looked at the data now, we're just not going to let women do this. It's number one, it's a waste of time. And number two, what we need is Marine Corps infantry officers. We don't need a social experiment to try to feminize our God-blessed Marine Corps. Thank you very much. Now, this next line in the article strikes me as sort of humorous. A Marine Corps spokeswoman then said, have you noticed this? Every time a spokesman comes on for either a police department or a military branch, it's always a spokeswoman. Always. They passed some kind of rule, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, that if you're going to have a public face on your extremely masculine organization, it must be a girl. I don't know why that is. Anyway, a Marine Corps spokesman said no women have volunteered for the next infantry officer's course, which begins in January. Now, that's before ACLU staff lawyer Ariella Migdal read this story. She's out there recruiting right now. You're going to find some girls, put them through this course. You can make it through the course, honey. Be a man. Stand up like a man. Unbelievable. So, the Marine Corps Infantry Officers Course, according to the Washington Times, the tests include lifting a 72-pound machine gun over your head while wearing a 71-pound backpack. Okay. I'm not sure I could have done that when I was, of fighting age. I certainly wouldn't want to try it now. I mean, I barely made it off the pew at church this morning. I had a 20-pound infant on my chest.
Infantry.
I mean, speaking of the infantry, yeah, that was rough duty this morning. Okay, so I barely survived that. Okay, now also, part of the Marine Corps Infantry Officers Course, marching 12 miles in less than 5 hours carrying a 71-pound rucksack. 12 miles, I said. I don't care if you're a girl or a boy. That's hard, okay? And that's why Marine Corps infantry officers are an elite fighting force. That's why they have defeated the forces of darkness over and over again for over two centuries. Because in the Marine Corps, what they're looking for is Marine Corps infantry officers. Men who can kill other men at high volume, extreme efficiency, in very bad conditions. They're not looking to advance people's careers. They're not looking to equalize and improve relations between the sexes. That's just not what it's about. It's about killing and destroying the enemies of freedom and justice. Finally, I always get a little bit emotional about the Marine Corps. Have you noticed that? I was only in for 4 years, and I laid around the barracks, and I went to the beach and drank beer. And that's right, I'm a hero. I'm a hero. I'm one of the heroes. Thank you very much. Anyway, I just want to personally thank Ronald Reagan for the buildup under which I went in that ensured that nobody was going to mess with us. I believe it was that missile he put in Gaddafi's tent that ensured I would never hear a shot fired in anger during my entire tour of duty in the United States Marine Corps. The Marine Corps Infantry Officers Course. One of the other tests, you have to evacuate a mock casualty weighing about 200 pounds. That means your buddy gets shot, and he's laying there, and he can't move, and you've got to evacuate him out of the combat zone, which means sometimes you have to pick him up by yourself and carry him. Or her, I guess I should say, just to be politically correct. 200 pounds. I mean, just try it, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so there we go. Now that the United States military has been virtually completely neutered, they're marrying off queers at West Point. The ACLU is forcing girls to lift 72-pound machine guns over their head for what? I don't know. And meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, the enemies of goodness, well, they're not taking a vacation just today. According to Reuters, suicide attackers detonated bombs and fired rockets outside a major U.S. base in Afghanistan on Sunday, killing 5 people. A Taliban spokesman said that they did it. They launched the assault. I guess that the Taliban was not scrubbed from the talking points, apparently. We're all willing to admit that it was the Taliban. The United States and Afghan government, according to Reuters, are scrambling to stabilize Afghanistan before most NATO combat troops withdraw at the end of 2014, come hell or high water. And I'm telling you, folks, it's hell that's coming. Yeah, it's hell that's coming. They're going to withdraw no matter what. And they're going to hand over security to alleged Afghan forces. So I remember in the days following September 11th, when America sent troops into Afghanistan, I remember debating a friend of mine who insisted that we would make quick work of the Taliban. I said, well, wait a minute. Now, these guys are dedicated, true believers. I mean, in a false god, but they're true believers. And they've been fighting in those mountains in their bare feet for generations. So this is not going to be any easy task. Here we are. It's now almost 2013. Nearly 12 years of war against a bunch of backward savages, frankly. They've just launched another major attack. But we've decided that in 2014 we're leaving. Whether we want to or not, or whether we can or should or not, none of that matters. The die has been cast. Barry has decided, bring the troops home and have them all attend homosexual weddings. No, say it ain't so, Chesty. I can hear him calling from beyond the grave. Chesty says, say it ain't so. Danny Daly says, say it ain't so. Smedley Butler says, say it ain't so about my Marine Corps. No, no, please. I can hear him. Yep. Anyway, it's a sad day. It's been a sad episode, frankly. I trace it back to Bill Clinton, but that's just because that's my own little tiny perspective on the world. I'm sure it's worse than all that, and it goes all the way back. I don't know. I don't know if there were any female officer candidates in Tun Tavern. I don't know if there were any homosexual couples at Tun Tavern, but somehow I think not. All right. Now, more from the war file. This is from the Independent in the United Kingdom. Bradley Manning, the homosexual soldier accused of causing the biggest security breach in American history, finally broke his silence this past week as he gave evidence at a pretrial hearing saying he felt like a doomed, caged animal after he was arrested for divulging secrets from the United States military, the State Department, the highest reaches of our intelligence community, to another sexual deviant at WikiLeaks. And everyone says, well, you know, homosexuals, they won't harm the military. They won't hurt anything. In fact, it'll be good for the military. What did Bradley Manning have to say? He was in military captivity. That's what the Independent calls it. In military captivity for 917 days. Now, what that says to me is that the justice system, even in the military, is completely grossly incompetent. If you can't take the biggest traitor in the history of the country, if you can't get him to trial in almost 3 years, for crying out loud, that's outrageous. Let's see, what did he have to say? He said, I remember thinking, I'm going to die. I'm stuck inside this cage. That's how I saw it. I just thought I was going to die in that cage. I felt like an animal in a cage. Unquote. That's Bradley Manning. So the 24-year-old homo's lawyers claim that his pretrial confinement was unnecessarily harsh. But military officials insist Manning was treated properly. The military says he was classed as, quote, prevention of injury, unquote, meaning when they locked him up, the reason they kept him in solitary confinement was because they thought he was suicidal. And by the way, contemporaneous psychiatric examinations concur, and Navy psychiatrists told the court last week that one psychiatrist, at least, said he believed Manning was suicidal when he first arrived at the camp where he was put into, what did they call it, military captivity. I think that's every homo's dream, is to be in military captivity. Get out of here with that, you little punk. A military judge, that was gratuitous. This guy makes me angry, though. When I get angry, I say things that are gratuitous, and that's why right now, if I was on the radio, the doors would be being kicked in. I'd be being hauled off to jail. A military judge has... this is the part of the story that makes me want to tear my hair out. A military judge has accepted terms under which the homo traitor could plead guilty to 8 counts of sending classified documents to WikiLeaks. Those charges could see Manning imprisoned for 16 years. However, government lawyers could pursue another 14 counts against Manning, but have not yet indicated if they plan to do so. So the broken, destructive, unjust justice system has bled into the military, obviously. They're on the verge of making a deal with the biggest traitor in American history since Benedict Arnold. Yeah, I mean, was there ever anyone bigger than Manning? For crying out loud. And they're going to make a deal with him so that he gets out of jail a relatively young man. He should be executed for what he did, because there are people who died as a result of the secrets that this homo and this other sexual deviant over at WikiLeaks, people were killed as a result of their breach of security, and therefore they should both be executed. Perhaps not summarily, like many of the victims of their crime were. I'm all for putting them both on trial, but could we get it over with, please? All right. On to the culture file. For some good news, let's go to Uganda. How often do you hear that? So we're talking about America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, the last great hope for anything good and just on the planet. And for some good news, let's go to Kampala, Uganda. The Ugandan lawmaker who originally authored an anti-gay bill that proposed the death penalty for some homosexual acts now says that a new version of the proposed legislation does not contain the death penalty, but it would still criminalize homosexuality. Yeah. Parliamentarian David Bahati said the bill, which is expected to be voted on next month, had moved away from the death penalty after considering all the issues that have been raised. He says there is now no death penalty in Uganda's new anti-homosexual bill, which will be voted on. The bill's original wording proposed the death penalty for cases where HIV-infected deviants had relations, where deviant people had sex with minors or the disabled, and where homos were discovered committing homosexual acts for a second time. Those were the conditions under which Uganda would have executed homosexuals. At the time, Bahati said these offenses amounted to what he called aggravated homosexuality. Can you imagine? They wouldn't even let this guy off a plane in the United States or Europe. You know, there'd be a mass, the crowds would stone him to death if he showed his face in the West. He's just trying to save Uganda from what always happens to every civilization that decriminalizes homosexuality. They all get destroyed by sexual perversion, okay? And I know at the first it's just a few extra hairdressers and interior decorators and everybody chuckles about it, but in the end, it's Rome and it's a bloodbath, okay? It always happens, and it will happen. It will happen to us. It'll happen to Uganda unless they pass this law. He says the bill will be passed before Christmas. It's been condemned by some world leaders. President Barry Ho has described the law as odious. European countries such as Sweden and Norway have threatened to cut foreign aid to Uganda if the bill becomes law. Well, that'd be the best thing for Uganda. Outlaw homosexuality and get off welfare from other European homo states. For crying out loud. Homosexual activists in Uganda are condemning the bill. They point out that it has somehow helped the struggle for equality by pushing a once taboo subject onto the national agenda. And this year, Ugandan homosexuals held their first gay pride parade. So, you know, you homosexuals, you keep sticking your finger in the eye of us normal people with your parades, marching up and down the streets half naked, acting like a bunch of perverts. You know, we might just recriminalize your deviant behavior because it is a crime. Yeah, it is. And another thing that bothers me about this, they say that this bill, these homosexual activists in Uganda say, well, this bill's helped because it's pushed a once taboo subject out into the light of day. And that's, you know, you've heard the term, there's no such thing as bad publicity. That applies in the homosexual community. As long as they can have people talking about what the filthy, disgusting things that they do to each other, they're advancing their cause because it normalizes it. And it makes our own gag reflex less reflexive because you hear about it all the time. You're inundated by it. It almost becomes normal. And that's the whole point of the whole movement. Disgusting. All right. We're running out of time. Yes, we're rapidly running out of time. A Belgian man, according to the Telegraph in London, is seeking to have his marriage annulled. He had an Indonesian wife, 19 years they've been married. The man, named Jan, married Monica, his family's former au pair, in a previous marriage back in 93. So do you get this, folks? This guy's married to another woman, has children. They hire an au pair to take care of the kids. He bails on his wife and kids for the au pair. Disgusting, right? A foul, vile human being, this guy. Well, he wants to annul his marriage now to the au pair. Let's see here. Do I want to read a lot of this story? No. He found out she was a man. She's a post-op transgendered homosexual. Now, he's been living with her for 19 years and claims he didn't know. I don't know how that can be, but I don't know what they do with the whole operation. I don't know how complete they do that, so I suppose it's possible. But, you know, He said his older son would just start to see her at nightclubs. She began to wear flashy clothes, ultra-short skirts, tiny tops, exposing her abdomen. And then Jan found amorous messages from other men on her computer. So at this point, if you're reading the story, it's just old-fashioned adultery. But no, this is 2012. Turns out she's a post-op transgendered freak. Jan is currently undergoing psychiatric treatment. The children, according to the article, are devastated. As well, you can imagine they are indeed devastated, far beyond what we can ever comprehend. I certainly hope I never have to comprehend anything like that in my life or in the life of anyone close to me. But two foul, vile, disgusting people. And that's what you get. All right. Now, reason number 641 not to send your children to public schools. This is from a Fox News article. When behavior comes violent and a student is at risk of hurting themselves or others, a teacher can put the child in what's known as a quiet room or an isolation room. Have you heard about this? Yeah. It's basically a padded cell that they have in the school. Yeah, there's bean bags, padded walls, comfortable chairs in there for the kid to go in and basically bounce off the walls until he wears himself out. It's a padded room. Yeah. They have those in the public schools now. What's that? Yeah, our kids love that. Like a padded room, just go in there and bounce around. That'd be great. But no, this is for what they call special needs kids. These are kids who are especially in need of discipline, although some of them are autistic and have genuine mental disabilities. And, of course, they're being mainstreamed into the schools because we're not allowed anymore to think that anyone is disabled or different in any way. We're all equal. We're all the same. So they mainstream these kids in there. The kids go ballistic. And the teachers have no idea how to discipline, train, or raise a child. So they don't know what to do. They end up building a concrete room with padded walls. What's a liberal to do, right? The communication director for one of the school districts in the article says the treatment is not used as punishment. It's used as treatment in lieu of a physical hold. This is just unbelievable. When you can't just spank a kid, I mean, it just gets ridiculous. They use it in lieu. I got to find my place again. It's used in it's in lieu of a physical hold, which I don't know. That would be some kind of, you know, like a wrestling hold. I guess they have those that are approved. Can you imagine that? You're just, the kid's out of control. He's unruly, so you put him in an approved hold. But you can't spank him. So it's the rubber room is used in lieu of a physical hold or another accepted therapeutic restraint. What's a therapeutic restraint? If you're going to restrain the child, why not spank him while you're restraining him? Maybe you could get him to behave. Let's see. Children put in the isolation room in this particular story all came from one classroom of 9 special needs students. The class has a teacher and two teachers' aides. The parents of all 9 children gave permission for their child to be put in the rubber room. And none have complained about its use because they're products of the public schools and they're complete morons. If you're sending your kids to the public schools, please try to find any way to escape because you're sinning against your child and you're sinning against God. All right. Now I have, I guess I have to go quickly. Pat Robertson has disavowed the biblical account of creation. He says, you go back in time, you have carbon dating, all these things, and you have the carcasses of dinosaurs frozen in time. They're out there. And so there was a time when these giant raptors were on the earth, and it was before the time of the Bible. So don't try to cover it up and make it like everything was 6,000 years ago. That's not the Bible. Says Pat Robertson, an alleged Christian leader. Yeah. I just want to remind Pat, and by the way, the sermon at Denver Bible Church this morning, folks, if you want to get the, what is today, December 2nd, get the sermon from December 2nd because Bob Enyart, in less than 3 minutes, completely destroys the arguments of this buffoon, shyster buffoon. The Bible says in the beginning, Pat, what do you think that means? says that man was created in the beginning. Anyway, I don't have time to go off on this, but get the sermon from Denver Bible Church, December 22nd, and you have an incredible defense of the young earth and the creation of man. I guess I don't want to quote anything. I had a lot of jokes here to make about Pat Robertson. You know what? I will be doing Bob Enyart's show at least once this week. I'm going to save this story and the other insults and jokes that I have here about Pat Robertson. I'll save them and do them with Bob because that will be a lot of fun. I'm also going to save this story on how you've heard on my show about the Liverpool Care Pathway. That's the pathway that the National Health Service in England uses to kill sick old people. Well, now it comes out they're using it to kill sick babies and infants and children. And I'm going to save that for Bob's show, too, because I simply don't have enough time to often cover everything that I want to cover on the show. And then I get distracted defending the Marine Corps and going off on these perverts and deviants at the ACLU and all the other deviants who are destroying all that's right and good and just, pure and clean. And so I sometimes I just don't have time to cover all the stories that I initially intended to cover. All right, so we'll do those on Bob Enyart Live this week. Be sure to tune in either at KGOV.com or if you're in the Denver metro area, tune in to AM 670, the 50,000-watt blowtorch for the gospel here in Denver. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, let's close with a story from National Review. This is from the politics file. Freshman Republican Congressman Chris Gibson hails from New York's Hudson Valley. Representative Gibson was asked just weeks after winning re-election whether he meant to stand by the Americans for Tax Reform pledge that he signed against tax increases. I don't care how you feel about Grover Norquist or the tax pledge. All I'm focusing on here is a man and his word. Or in this case, a Republican and his word. Well, Representative Gibson now says that he signed the pledge back in 2010 when he was a candidate for Congress, but the pledge was made to the people of New York's 20th congressional district. Since then, the districts have been gerrymandered and redistricted, and now he says, I represent the 19th district of Congress, and therefore his pledge not to raise taxes no longer applies. I'm not making this up. This is not, you know how I feel about Republicans. This is the kind of story I would make up just to make them look bad. But this is a real story. He said, well, I'm not serving that district anymore, so all bets are off. I could raise taxes. I could get a sex change operation. Nothing applies anymore. I'm a Republican. Ladies and gentlemen, the Republican Party needs to commit mass political suicide. They need to all resign and just get out. And I pray to God that there's someone in the country who's going to stand up and start a third party that finally puts the Republican Party out of our misery. They don't deserve it. They need to be gone. Politically dead. Their carcasses need to fall in the wilderness, he said, speaking rhetorically, of course. That's it, folks. See, my throat's even getting sore. Believe this? All right. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life. Is there anybody I missed? Theology Online, that's right. So tune in next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.